Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every week, 3 p.m. Pacific time on Saturdays. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We rebroadcast on a2zen.fm on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time. And we archive these programs at... where else? RichardDugan.com, the radio show page. We encourage you to check out our guests. We are linked to their websites and information that will be helpful for you if you are interested in what they have to say, and we certainly hope that you are. And we ask you to check out what they have to offer you in terms of support and encouragement and guidance throughout your journey, your process. And today's guest material and what we're going to talk about is no exception. Just a very quick update for you that we've been doing this program for, it still astounds me that we've been doing this for over 6 years. It's amazing. We'll be 7 years next September of 2014. And yet I've been interviewing for, well, it'll be 35 years next August that I got into this business and have been interviewing for as long. And I've talked to some really incredible folks. I can only guess. I don't have numbers, but I can only guess it's in the thousands of people that I've interviewed. You'd think that maybe I would have had a little foresight and would have started keeping track. If I'd kept all of the cassettes of all of the programs that I had recorded back in the 80s and the 90s, then transferred over to CD and now MP3, and it's just a file, and you're able to download it and listen to it. It doesn't even cost you anything other than, I mean, some might say, well, yeah, there's always a cost. Well, if you have internet service, then you're paying for that. But we offer it free at richarddugan.com. So it's just incredible what we have come across. And today it's going to be a fun day, I think, too, because it's dealing with a group of species that are near and dear to my heart, and they are the animals of the world. At one point, we had some 30 or 40 chickens. We have, I think, 7 cats, and we have 2 dogs, and one of them is getting bigger and bigger every day. We have bird feeders out in the yard to bring in the finches and the blue jays and whatever other birds want to hang around the place, and we're certainly open to that. Not real thrilled with the rats and little gophers and so forth, but hey, they're up there too where we live. And we'll see hawks and crows and all kinds of other things, an occasional bear. I have pictures up on the website. Go to richarddugan.com/bear, B-E-A-R, and you can see pictures of the bear that we had up there a couple, 3 years ago. Just amazing what we surround ourselves with. And there are lots of different stories, if you will, a lot of different ways of looking at animals that come across our path, whether they are ours in terms of us taking care of them, being their caregivers, if you will, or they cross your path. Maybe you're walking along or you're driving and suddenly a crow flies across. You don't hit it, but it just flies across your path as you're driving, or a fox, or whatever the creature might be. And this program isn't necessarily here to talk about what those mean. It's important. I think it's something to take a look at, but we're going to delve into the story of Patricia Books, her personal journey, in the book entitled God is in the Little Things, Messages from the Animals. And Patricia Brooks, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Richard.
Obviously, you are, well, I shouldn't say that, because just because you've had these experiences doesn't not automatically make one an animal lover, but I would venture you probably are.
Absolutely. I am definitely an animal lover.
I know that if my wife had her druthers, we would have a small little rescue ranch, if you will. Taking in, we even had a peahen at one time. Great bird, and the eggs that she laid were also very delicious too. But we're here to talk, of course, about your story, your personal journey, and how that relates to the animal kingdom, because you have had what some might consider the distinct privilege of receiving messages through the animal kingdom. Tell us when and where your journey began.
Well, Richard, my journey has been quite a few years, but most recently, the last couple of years, the animals have really started presenting themselves to me. And yes, I agree with you. It is absolutely a privilege. A couple of times, the animals that presented themselves at the moment, I wouldn't have considered a privilege. I was pretty scared by a few of them. But in hindsight, I realize it is a privilege. And most of the animals presented themselves to me in my home, in and around my home.
So are you living, or were you over the last few years living in what would be considered a fairly rural area?
Not necessarily. Think suburbia.
Okay.
The woods, but mostly suburbia.
Okay. Well, I know that here along the Central Coast, most of us live in somewhat of a rural area. Yes, there's a downtown, there's an uptown, and so forth, but we're right along the frontage of a mountain range where you still have all kinds of wild animals. I know that I've even seen a snake or two early on. Haven't seen one recently, but you know, it's just amazing, you know, what you come across, you know, if you keep your eyes open. And many of our guests have spoken to the fact that we as a society, as a civilization, we need to get back to nature. We need to reconnect. And it sounds to me like your communication with the animals is taking us down that particular path.
Right, absolutely. And I certainly hope so. I'm hoping that my book will actually start the conversation on a large scale, because I absolutely agree that we need to connect with nature more, and that we've lost that since ancient times, cultures have understood the connection to the natural world and the animals, and have looked to the animals for guidance and inspiration. But it's sorely missing in our modern society, that connection that we should have.
Now, you're in the process, or maybe you've completed it by the time this book was published. You've been a student in an interfaith seminary, is that correct?
Absolutely, yes. I'm finishing this year. I have one more year, and I will be ordained as an interfaith minister.
And what is an angel healing practitioner?
I'm also that. That's within the last year or two that I've taken different classes and done quite a bit of study with the different angelic realms and the different healing practices using the archangels or requesting the archangels healing.
I find it very interesting, too. I was conversing with someone the other day who shared with me that they had taken a course in consciousness studies. It was actually at one of the UC colleges or universities here in California. And I'm going, really? I was shocked when I heard metaphysics was being made available at the college level.
I think that's wonderful. I think what happens, and it certainly happened to me, I'm no exception, is that, you know, we just get so busy. You know, we're very, very distracted by everything that's going on around us, that we actually have to make a point to be mindful of or be conscious of ourselves and our spiritual connections. So on one hand, it is kind of silly, isn't it, to do what should be very natural to us, but I believe that we live in a very distracted society. And that's exactly what happened to me. It didn't take a course. It took what I consider great emotional trauma that I went through on my journey, you know, with marriage, divorce, and the aftermath, to get my attention, you know, to finally stop me from being so distracted by everything going on around me and get my attention and say, wow, I really need to understand. I really need to know what's going on, because I was truly struggling.
Well, I know that for each of us, you know, we gather our education, if you will, from so many different sources, and not necessarily from universities and higher institutions of learning, but just from our day-to-day life. The old school of hard knocks, many people will refer to it as. But that is certainly a place where We are learning through extremely practical experiences. And I know that we also hear, like, from our parents or our friends or family, you know, why can't you learn from my lessons instead of having to go through? Well, it wouldn't be quite as profound, you know,
absolutely,
if we didn't go through them. Although I can certainly appreciate the concern and compassion and understanding that one would have to try to help me to avoid, you know, having to go down the one path or the other that could be more harmful, you know, than helpful. But I'm curious as to not so much how you get these messages, but why you?
Why me? I asked myself that quite a few times. I believe that, well, can I just back up for a second and,
sure,
and just speak for a moment on what animal totems are?
Now, how do those differ? And I will let you do that, but how do those differ from omens? And those, like I mentioned at the beginning of the program.
Right. Well, animal totems, I can't speak specifically on omens. I think that omens, to me, that's, you know, almost sounds very ominous,
mm-hmm,
you know, warning you of something, I would think. Animal totems or spirit animals are just our animal friends. And since ancient times, as I mentioned before, people have looked to the animals and studied their specific behaviors and characteristics to tell them about the symbolism or the messages that the animals can give you. The belief is that, as far as animal totems or spirit animals, that the animals energetically communicate with us, whether it's through their own spirit or it is God communicating through the animals. And so animal totems or spirit animals can be our life totem, meaning that it's an animal that's associated with us throughout our entire life and usually speaks to our inner nature or inner gifts, and or a message totem that can come to us, different animals, different times in our lives, that come to us with specific messages for us, communicating with us.
Well, how does one make that differentiation, or maybe more appropriately, because you are the one who has this wonderful information, how do you make that determination? Have people come to you and said, "Hey, I need to know what my animal totem is, or what type of totem it is, whether it's
right,
as you said, life or otherwise."
Right. Well, as far as a message totem is concerned, an animal bringing you a message, it's really, really important that the animal is doing something unique or repetitive. You know, like if I'm sitting outside and a bird flies over my head, that wouldn't necessarily be a message totem. It's not just a random animal that you may run into.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, the animal will present itself to you in a unique way, something out of character for the animal, or in a very repetitive way, meaning that maybe you do see... I know I had someone who had a hawk that was sitting on their back deck for quite a few days in a row. This hawk would come and sit in this very specific place and, you know, almost be making eye contact with the person. You know, it was out of character and it was repetitive enough that you could say, wow, you know, that's unusual, and then look up or research maybe what the hawk symbolism is, and there very well could be a message for you in that.
Now, do you have that kind of information regarding different animals within your book, or is there another resource that we would want to look up in terms of trying to figure that out? And could these animals be our pets?
Yes to all of those answers. The animals that presented themselves to me, my book is actually my personal journey. So it's my emotional and spiritual journey. And I go from kind of sadness and loss to really finding joy again and reclaiming myself, my self-love. And I did that through understanding more of my spiritual nature, who I really am. And it's told through the visits of the animals, and all along the way, animals very uniquely presented themselves to me. So I tell you my story, and I tell you the animals, and then I explain the symbolism of the animals within the context of the story. So the animals that visited me, I absolutely explain their symbolism and their specific message to me. And then I also have suggested readings and more information in the back of the book, resources that people can go to you know, look up more animals or learn more about animal totems.
How much of this is observational and how much of this for you is more intuitive in terms of understanding whether they're a life totem or a messenger totem and so forth?
You know, that's a great question because I do believe that we need to increase our intuition. I think that that's part of reconnecting with the natural world is, you know, we need to pay attention. And once we actually start paying attention, it's you know, people may be surprised at how open and accessible this information is. I think we know. I think we know when something happens, if it's meaningful to us or not. I think there's that still small voice within ourselves, you know, that speaks to us. So, yes, I think it's very important that when people are, you know, delving into any area of spirituality and walking down their spiritual path, that they really pay attention and listen to their own intuitive voice.
So, if I were to say to you, Patricia, I'd really like to know if I even have an animal totem.
Great.
What's the first step?
Well, the first step is to invite the messages. The first step is to start to pay attention. Now, if we were looking at message totems versus life totems, you know, it would be a little bit different. Some people believe that everyone has a life totem. It's just a matter of whether or not you connect with the animal or conscious of it. One important thing to remember, though, is that the animals pick you. You know, you can't sit there and go, oh, I'd really like to have this really cool, you know, hawk as my totem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every animal is actually very, very cool, and it's their behaviors and characteristics which are symbolic of your inner nature. So in answer to your question, it's very important to be open to it, and then the animal will, if you're open to it, the animal could very well present itself to you.
We're talking about in a literal, physical kind of way.
It can be a literal, physical way. That's all the animals in my book presented themselves to me very physically, more physically than I would have liked in a couple occasions. But some people also, you know, experience their life totems, you know, in dreams or in meditations. It depends on, you know, there's many different ways to do it. It depends on which way, you know, you feel most comfortable with.
Well, let me ask you this. In regards to an experience that I had, actually, it's a few years ago. I was working on the chicken coop, and I was tending to the girls and, you know, putting out the feed and the water and so forth one evening, just kind of cleaning things up. And sadly, I found one girl who had died. And so the only way at that time, because we had 30 or 40 of them, and it wasn't like I could set up a cemetery, you know, for a burial site for each of them. That just really wasn't practical. Nonetheless, I headed up the hill around the corner, and I was heading for the trash receptacle and tried to do that as gently and as ceremoniously as I could. And I heard this rustling in these bushes over by a loquat tree on the property where we live. And I stopped, and I looked, and I listened, and all of a sudden, this brown bear stood up and looked at me, and I thought, oh, okay, a bear. And I'll leave him alone, and I'll go off and do my thing and let him do his thing. And he bent back down again, and he went back to eating the fruits and what have you, because there was a plum tree nearby as well. And I walked back down the hill, and my wife walked out the front door of the cottage that we live in, and she says, oh, what's going on? I said, oh, I just saw a bear up the hill. And she got so excited. She said, I want to see the bear. I want to see the bear. And I said, all right, hang on a second, because I wasn't quite finished at the chicken coop. Finished up what I needed to there. She was already headed down the road, so I caught up with her. And we walked back up the same hill and stopped at the same spot that I did. And I said, he's right over there, I think. And we heard the rustling. And he stood up again, and he looked over at us. And almost as a matter of annoyance, like, you know, you guys are interrupting my private dining here. So I'm leaving. So he walked across the road, past the garbage cans, out to the roadway, and headed down the highway, or not the highway. This was a small road down towards. There's a place called the Cold Spring Tavern, and that was the direction that he headed. So I shared that with him, and he headed down towards the tavern. And then, of course, our neighbor happened to, on another day during the day, happened to get some pictures of him playing in a pool on her spot of the property. And I have those pictures, as I've mentioned, on my website. If you go to richarddugan.com/bear, B-E-A-R, you can see those photographs. There was no fear. I wasn't concerned for my safety. I just looked at him. He looked at me like, oh, you're doing that. Oh, you're doing that. And we said, okay, see ya. I mean, and that was it. Is that an experience that one could say, that was maybe a messenger totem?
I believe, absolutely. I think that if you feel especially that, you know, you and the bear maybe locked eyes and you felt a connection to the animal, you know, that was unusual and maybe an experience maybe that your wife wasn't specifically having,
yeah.
then absolutely. Then I think it would definitely could be.
Well, she shared with me some experiences with some wild animals. In particular, she was actually in a cage with a bobcat once. It was a very large cage, and other creatures as well, just in her travels around. So obviously, she has an incredible connection with animals in particular, fostering of kittens and cats and what are called queens, which are mother cats who have yet to give birth, especially ones who are somewhat feral. We even had one mother who actually started to come around, and she, after 3 or 4 weeks that she was with us with her kittens, my wife was actually able to pet her, and I think she actually picked her up at one point. So, you know, those kinds of things you have to be patient with. But
right. Well, you know, I was just going to say, in if I can interrupt for a
mm-hmm,
second,
sure.
That if we're speaking about a life totem, you mm-hmm. know, you're mentioning that your wife's, you know, ability to interact with the animals and the relationship with them. If you're speaking about a life totem, typically the life totems are, you know, wild animals, but you know, it could be, let's say, a type of cat that your wife maybe has as her life totem.
Mm-hmm.
So if your wife was really interested in something like that, she could, you know, she could meditate, she could, you know, ask, you know, or they say a lot of times if you, you know, put your intention before you go to sleep, you know, that you will manifest in your dream state, you know, the answer to your question. But it might be really interesting. She can't pick her life totem. You know,
right.
The animal picks you.
Right.
But it certainly sounds like it may be, you know, something in the cat family, you
sure.
know, that your wife might have an affinity. A lot of times you have an affinity towards the animal. A lot of times you have, you know, a deep respect or love for the animal. You know, that's ends up being your power totem, even though, like I said, you can't pick them, they pick you, but it seems to be a mutual, you know, fondness.
Exactly, exactly. I myself, in terms of having pets, didn't have very many when I was a kid growing up. My dad didn't really care much for dogs or cats, for that matter, in spite of the fact that we did have a calico cat whose name was Calico. We did have hamsters. I think my oldest sister had a parakeet at one point. We've had lovebirds back when we lived in Phoenix, different ones at different times. Matter of fact, at one point, it was really quite amazing. The 4 Siberian Huskies that we had at the time broke in through the French doors at the house, toppled the bird cage, and we thought that one of them had eaten the bird. But the bird cage had broken open, and the reason that we know this, it was because the following Thanksgiving, we were sitting outside having dinner, and we heard this noise, this sound, this bird chirping, and we looked up on top of this telephone wire, and there was Merlin, that was his name, sitting up there. He had never left.
Wow.
He'd stayed around. You know, so it's like I said, I've been surrounded by animals most of my life. And it is only in the last 8 or 10 or 12 years that I've actually had, you know, larger pets like cats and dogs. And, you know, and they're very important. I mean, those types of animals are like family. And that's different, I think, than what you're talking about in terms of totems. Although
right.
the life totem might sort of become part of your extended family that you may not, especially if it's wild, that you may not see every day.
Right. Absolutely. I think it's really important, you know, my belief is that we are really all one spirit, you know, that we're connected to each other, mm-hmm. we're connected to nature, mm-hmm. we're connected to the animals, you know, that it's all the divine spirit that is in all of us. And because of that connection, you know, we communication, you know, two-way, you know, is not only possible, it's happening all around us. So the animal may not come up and have a conversation in words with us, but the animals absolutely in nature absolutely can energetically communicate with us all the time.
Absolutely. Well, I want to let our listeners know also, and I was actually looking at some of these websites as well as the other additional reading material. Folks can go to a website. It is God is in the little things, surprise, surprise, GodIsInTheLittleThings.com, which is your website where people can learn more. You have some other websites we won't go into at this particular point in time, but some good resource information for people to follow up on after having had the opportunity of reading your book, God is in the Little Things, Messages from the Animals by Patricia Brooks, My Personal Journey. And we're going to continue journeying down that way as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. We'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I'm here with Patricia Brooks, author of God is in the Little Things. Put a .com on that. Boom, you're at her website. GodIsInTheLittleThings.com. Messages from the Animals, and it is Patricia Brooks' personal journey, and we're so grateful for her taking time to share with us her story and information. Animals are, for a lot of people, not something they want in their lives. They just have too much going on with work and socializing and on and on and on to have any time to spend. I don't have time to have dogs and cats. I got to feed them and I got to clean up after them and I got to play with them. And I've got too much on my plate. Do you find that those types of people with those kinds of lifestyles end up being sort of bombarded by outside, shall we call them, animal connections?
You know, personally, I believe that God or the divine, however we want to think of him or her, communicates with us in whatever ways we are open to. So I believe that the animals are one way that God communicates with me because I'm very open to the animals. So I think that if you, maybe you're not an animal lover, or you know, you just, you know, are not very connected to nature or not that interested, you know, then God probably maybe has a different way to communicate with you. I think that if you want God to communicate with you through nature and through the animals, the first thing that you need to do is invite the animals, you know, to visit you. You know, be open to the possibility and start paying attention. You know, they say listen with your heart, you know, not necessarily your mind. Open your spiritual heart and invite the animals or invite the communication through nature, and then it will absolutely come to you.
Do you have people coming to you maybe misinterpreting a little bit about messages from the animals, thinking, oh, I'll go to Patricia and she'll be able to give me a message from, you know, the foxes or the bears or something of this nature, some
right.
kind of an intuitive gift they think you have?
Well, you know, I'm definitely not psychic in any way, at least not yet. Maybe one day, you know, maybe one day I'll have that privilege. Currently I'm not. But I do believe I'm intuitive, and I believe that, you know, people have come to me and said, you know, this heron was in my pool, or, you know, these birds have been visiting me, and what does this mean? And I tell everybody that it's really important, as with anything, that, you know, I can give you some basic general symbolism of the animal, but that it's really important if you're to to do some more reflection, maybe do a little more research, and really, you know, really see how it feels to you and, you know, if it resonates with you or not. So, yes, I get questions from people, but about physical animals that have presented themselves to them, not about, you know, psychically, can you,
right,
you know, tell me if an animal has a message. But the one thing that I do feel like people maybe misunderstand more than anything is that it's really important with animal symbolism is that the animal is presenting itself to you in a unique or repetitive way. Like I said, if I'm just sitting outside on my deck and, you know, a bird flies over my head, you know, I mean, that's pretty random and mm-hmm. probably flew over a bunch of people's heads. That wouldn't necessarily be a message. Every animal you see isn't necessarily a message animal. The animal will let you know, will definitely let you know, will do something out of character that will get your attention.
I.e., you need to stay open.
Open, aware,
yeah.
pay
mm-hmm.
attention.
Yeah.
And invite the animals. You know, like I said, I believe God communicates with us in many ways. Through nature and the animals is one way, but you need to be open to it.
In this instance, with this interview with you, Patricia, I can only ask for your assessment, your observation of examples of animals that have come into our lives. We had not too long ago, I mean, this is kind of an odd occurrence, certainly not one that I thought of per se, but we found my wife's new dog, Angus, who is a close to 90-pound Black King Shepherd, and he's still a puppy. He's not more than he's barely a year old. And he was over in one corner of the yard, and he was fussing with something on the ground that neither of us could make out. So we ran down there because anytime an animal, a dog, focuses on something like that, if it's a toy or something, fine. But it was something that we couldn't identify. When we got down there, there was a fox, a dead fox that had apparently fallen out of the tree. And Angus was there, you know, kind of just nosing it, and we pushed him away because, you know, we don't know dead or alive at that particular point. Nonetheless, what ended up happening was it was on a Friday, and one of the programs that I produce had a guest, and I shared that little incident with him. And he was a Native American here on the Central Coast. He asked to take the carcass to be used for ceremony. I thought, okay, that's very interesting. I've not really heard that. And what ended up happening was we developed a relationship of sorts. I mean, a good friendship, to where, you know, he's looking for another place to live, and there may be a spot up on our hill that we may be able to get better acquainted in that regard. But we had him come over, he with a friend of his. He did some ceremony and so forth, and then took the fox carcass with him. And the reason why I find that experience so significant is because without the fox appearing in our yard, we would have never had the human connection with this other gentleman. And,
right.
and we stay in contact even to this day. Where something like that goes, I don't know. But that is, to me, I don't know what your thoughts are, but that just seems to me like it's not exactly a message per se,
right.
but that the fox sort of served sort of
connection.
A purpose in connection. Yes.
Yes. It's a connection. Absolutely. Right. So I wouldn't look up, you know, the behaviors and characteristics of a fox to take a message from that.
Right.
But I do believe that goes back to what we were saying before, that we are all one spirit,
yeah.
and we're all connected. And the connection with the natural world and the animals is real. So absolutely. Just like, you know, you could run into somebody and, you know, they serve a purpose or in your life somehow. It might have been a random run-in, which nothing's really random, they say.
Right.
You know, there are no coincidences, right? So absolutely, I think that, you know, is a great example of that happening, but through, you know, the intercession of the natural world with the fox.
Yeah. And I repronounce that word as coincidences. Because there are events that coincide with one another. And as you say, they are not random. They are for a reason. But then again, how open are we to pick up on that reason, that purpose, and so forth.
Right. And you know what, Richard, I think that is just so incredibly important. I think that, you know, if a message, you know, if I could give a message to your listeners, mm-hmm. is that I feel so strongly that the divine, that God is everywhere and in all things. You know, we just simply need to open our hearts and our minds to the magnificence that is all around us. You know, we are divine beings, and as such can be open to receiving divine communication in many different ways, and to acknowledging and responding to the connections that we all have with each other in the natural world.
Tell me a little bit about your upbringing in terms of your spirituality. Where do you, shall we say, where do you hail from in that respect?
I was raised Roman Catholic, and I still, you know, practice Catholicism. I practice a lot of different religious beliefs. As you mentioned before, I'm in interfaith seminary school. Mm-hmm. And if someone's not familiar with what interfaith is basically acknowledges and respects all faiths and beliefs. So it's completely opposite of, let's say, if someone says they're non-denominational, then they have no specific maybe belief, but interfaith acknowledges and respects all, because what we believe at the heart of all different religious practices or beliefs is the core divine energy, the divine spirit, and that we really are all one. So I still believe in Jesus. I still pray to Jesus. You know, I mean, I'm probably as, you know, an average a person as you can come across. Used to be a soccer mom, you know, and I think that's another reason, you know, I mean, just reflect on this for a second. I think that's another reason that these experiences happen to me is because I am so ordinary, let's say. You know, I have two daughters. I mean, I'm middle America, middle aged, you know, I'm middle kind of everything. And I think that that's what makes this me so relatable. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's where there's so much, I believe, so much power that comes from the experiences that happened to me, because I didn't seek them out. I wasn't looking to have a spiritual awakening. I was just trying to, you know, live day to day and be married and raise my kids. And, you know, and then I believe God had some other, you know, ideas in store for me. So I guess a very long answer to your question is, so I was raised Roman Catholic. I absolutely believe in God. I believe that God is everything, though, and everywhere. You know, what I've realized on my spiritual journey is that I don't have to be a passive observer in my relationship with God. You know, it's not me praying to God. It's, you know, I can be an active participant in my spiritual journey, and I can be aware and open to communication that is all around me and all around you.
You know, it's interesting that you would talk about that, because one of the things that I find so interesting is that people are constantly searching for that connection. I was watching a program not too long ago dealing with people seeking out someone to follow. And that's not exactly the right word, but sort of that mentor or what have you. They were searching for someone that would help and guide them along, maybe more along the lines of a mentor. I've had a number of people in my life that, you know, that didn't necessarily have any religious affiliation, but I became very close to. They were good friends, and that was our connection. But I never had one person that, or one, shall we say, group that I felt like, boy, they have it, and I've got to go in that direction. And I used to think, well, maybe there's something wrong with me because I'm not really finding that. And by the same token, I wasn't really looking either. So, you know, it's kind of like seek and ye shall find. Well, if you're not seeking, you won't find. It wasn't something that was that has been and really isn't to this day all that interesting to me to find an individual. It's more trying to understand the principles, the precepts, if you will, more along the lines, I guess, of the philosophy, if you, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And as you and it's all of it is leading me right back to that which you are talking about. And that is the fact that we are all connected. We are all one, our oneness with all things. It's and science is now starting to acknowledge and verify, although I've had a problem with science being used to support a faith or belief system, because if you use science to support it, it's no longer faith. It's no longer belief. It's something different.
Right.
You know, it's like, I you know, they say they found the God particle. And of course, as you may know, Higgs won the Nobel Prize in physics just recently for that very thing. You know, they found the God particle and so on and so forth. And great. That's what you're calling it. I don't know what that means.
Right, you know? Right, absolutely.
Because if you think about it, you and I probably would already agree we, as individuals, are already God particles.
Right. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I agree with you. And I think this is kind of a tough conversation, this particular one, because I know that people are very attached to their,
sure,
you know, religious beliefs and the religious upbringing.
And we don't want to push them away from that either.
Right, absolutely. And I respect all of them, actually. Mm-hmm. I love to celebrate all of them. We celebrate all of them, like I said, in interfaith. I kind of separate religion and spirituality in the sense that I look at religion as a way to celebrate my faith. I love rituals. I love the rituals in the Roman Catholic faith.
Yes.
And I look at that as a celebration. You know, when I go to Mass, I'm celebrating my faith, and I think that's what keeps it, you know, fun for me. And I think all the different religious practices are celebrating their faith. But my understanding of my spiritual self, my essence, is not contained within those religious beliefs. You know, my spirituality, I believe, is separate. So the religious beliefs allow me to celebrate my spiritual self. You know, I kind of look at it from that sense. But I agree with you that people are searching. I believe people are yearning for a deeper connection and a greater understanding of themselves. And I understand that, because partway through my journey, you know, when kind of the bottom fell out of my life, I was struggling. I was struggling greatly, and I was reaching out and saying, you know, God, my angels, you know, somebody help me here, because I need help. And that really kind of propelled me on my deeper spiritual understanding. And I think if I can make one kind of point about that, the part that really changed things for me, the part that I really kind of got it, was when I finally understood, or I believe I understand, the difference between, you know, the ego and the spirit. And I think that's where we get really tripped up. I think that's where people start feeling they're sad, they're angry, you know, the negativity, because they're dislocated from their true spiritual self. And what keeps messing us up, for lack of a better word, is our ego. And a really easy way that I finally was able to understand it, and I actually talk about this in my book, because my book is my spiritual journey, is the ego is the human shell. You know, my ego is Patricia. You know, it's the personality that I'm wrapping around my spiritual self.
Mm-hmm.
My spiritual being is completely different. And it's not Patricia. So once I was able to look and say, the mask of my ego, that personality, that Patricia, that's not me. That's just my personality I've created, but that's not me. That's not where my value comes. That's not where my sense of worth comes. That's not where my connection to spirit comes. That's my personality. That's my ego. That's separate. And then I could see my spiritual self. and I could honor my spiritual self, and I could celebrate and love my spiritual self. And the spirit that is in you and that is in everyone that's listening to us, you know, has that same spirit. And that, I believe, is magnificent.
I've shared on this program and in past programs regarding this whole concept that I have come to somewhat understand, because it is rather, it's like, I understand God. Okay, sure. Or I understand the infinity of the universe. I can grasp that. The whole concept of oneness. And I've read from many of the ancient wisdom teachings that talk about the oneness. And that's where we all came from, and that's where we're all going to. And the paradox for me was, well, then what the heck are we doing in this duality that we call this reality? It makes no sense to me that we're even here. What's right. The whole point? And of course, people say, well, it's experience. And it's like, well, wait a minute. But if we are God particles and we came from the oneness, I still haven't been able to grasp why we felt we needed the experiences.
Well, you know what's really interesting? Gosh, you're just asking the greatest questions, because I've just been, doing some reading on that. I'm actually rereading a book, Conversations with God, which I read years ago, and I'm rereading it. And one of the things that they talk about in that book that resonates with me, and I think that's really important, that people, they know when something is their truth because it just, really speaks to them. I mean, I can read many different books and go, okay. But then I read certain things and I'll say, yes, that is my truth. That I understand. That resonates with me. And it's explained in the book that the concept of experiences, we're here for experiences. We're not here for lessons. And I'm so happy to realize that, because...
No more tests!
Yeah, exactly. Lessons to me have always been so punitive. And I'm like, why do we have to learn lessons? Like, what do we do wrong? So we're not. We're here to have experiences. But we have the experiences because in the spiritual sense, it's just more conceptual. You have to come to the physical plane to actually feel it. So, like, for example, I've never been skydiving, but, I could think, wow, that's probably very exhilarating. I would think that I probably have no idea what that really feels like unless I actually have the courage to skydive, right? There's a complete difference with thinking you know what something's like and then having the experience. And the actual experience, and you mentioned the word duality, there is the duality of emotions, right? We have to be sad at some points in order to be joyful at others, to understand what joy means, because it's in contrast to the sadness that we've also felt. We have to actually have the physical experience in order to feel it.
Well, and of course, I know, too, a couple things that I'm rereading a book of mine. I call it my Metaphysical Primer, which is autobiography of a yogi. And in it talks about this whole concept and referring to the state of bliss. And so I'm trying to understand how that's different. Is that part of another duality, or is bliss a different state of calmness and, shall we say, contentment? In that it's we're not talking joy here, because the opposite of joy is sadness. Okay,
right.
So every emotion, and it's not an emotion. That's the other aspect, because with emotions there's always one side and the other. Again, back to the duality.
Right.
So now I'm trying to understand the aspect, the concept of bliss, and thinking, okay, that sounds like a good place to be. And I will, the only thing I can characterize it to or link it to is the concept, the metaphor of being somewhere on the shaft of a pendulum as it swings to and fro. Now, many of us are down at the end, and boy, we are being swung all the way to the left and then way back over to the right. And there are others of us who are further up the pendulum. The spot of bliss is right at the top, at the pivot point, where you're barely even moving, and you're just observing. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know. Right. It's just a thought.
Right. Well, they say, you know, bliss is referred to as a state of bliss.
Yes.
So to go along with that, it's not an actual emotion.
Right.
So. I mean,
it'd be like the state of consciousness. And there's another aspect, too, certainly more questions we won't go into that I will have to ask my philosophy professor. We've had on Mark McIntyre a couple of times and more questions for him. You know, what is consciousness and what's the difference between the consciousness that I'm at now and higher consciousness? How do we get there? So on and so forth. I'm sure he would say that greater minds than his, but he's a pretty wise guy, a wise individual as well. But it actually raises another question, and I'm sure that this question's been raised numerous times down through the centuries in human history by philosophers and others, religious and spiritual. And that has to do with the existence of man. And I don't know exactly when or where. All I know is that the question came to my mind as I am watching. And I've only been here a scant, just a puff of 53 years on this planet.
Right.
And
well,
yet,
at least this time.
Well, this time. This time around, I've only been here a scant 53 years.
Right.
Less than a puff of smoke. In the entirety of the universe, and I'm already tired of the silliness and the stupidity. And my question has to do with the continuation of the species, and the question is why? What, to continue the silliness and stupidity? I thought that we were, you know, and if we're all connected, don't get
right.
me wrong, I understand that. But I don't want to stay at this level. I want to go to higher levels.
Right.
But if we're all connected, can I really do that without being held back by those that I'm connected to?
Right, right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And you know what? I mean, we're connected because we're all part of the divine spirit. But we're not connected. I don't believe that we move together. You know what I mean? I mean, so I believe that once we have our experiences and... you know, that we're supposed to have. I do believe that we, you know, we continue. And I also believe that we choose to come here to have experiences. So on some level, somewhere before you got tired, you know, you wanted to come here.
Well, you've ever watched a flock of birds fly?
Have I ever watched a flock? Yes.
All
absolutely.
Right. And you notice, because you use the word that you don't necessarily, we don't necessarily move together. But when you watch that flock of, could be, dozens of birds, or hundreds for all that matters, or even a school of fish. And the way that they, in unison, and they've been doing some studies where they just instinctively know what the others are going to do. There's a connectedness there that they're trying to study scientifically. They think, oh, maybe a move of a head and of the lead bird and this and that and the other. But it's like it is so instantaneous. How could that really be? There's got to be some inner wiring, so to speak.
It's just so cool, isn't it?
Oh, it's miracle.
And I think that's another, you know, kind of message, you know, if I could give you listeners, is that ever since I started really paying attention and becoming more aware of the connection to nature and the animals, it's life is just so much more fun. You know, it's just so much more, talk about state of bliss. You know, I'll throw out there a state of awe because, you know, it just makes life fun. You know, it just to take time to connect, to take time to pay attention, to take time to be grateful for the magnificent world we live in and the other creatures that are on the earth with us,
mm-hmm.
It just makes everything so much more enjoyable. Like watching a flock of birds fly by and just
well, we have marvel. Here in Santa Barbara, we have a breakwater by the marina, and you can walk out onto the breakwater and watch the tide roll in and out. And I was out there one day, and I was watching. It was cloud cover, but nonetheless, watching this flock of birds, and they weren't in a group; they were in a line. A single file line and flying in the same pattern as the lead.
Right.
each one in turn would make the same turn at almost the same spot in the sky. I mean, it was just, I'm going, wow. I mean, it wasn't so much how do they do that. It was, wow, they do that.
Right.
You know, right. Didn't care how, because I'm not going to find out unless I choose to follow these other scientists who are trying to figure it out. And yet right. There are those of us on this earth who we are, our spirit, the spirit part of us is really working hard to try to listen to that still small voice, which to me helps us to move together. Those of us who are, and again, this is not a judgment on those who aren't listening by any means. It's not a judgment. It's just an observation that because that voice is coming from the same source,
right?
The oneness as it has been described. And so you and I, Patricia, and others like us who are listening, even though you and I may be doing totally different things, because we're each as individuals being led in different directions to do certain things. But on the grand scheme of things, what you and I are doing as individuals is working like, you know, two cogs in a machine, if you will.
Oh, there's the greater consciousness.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, people can say, you know, why do bad things happen or why do good things happen or why does this happen? And I believe that we manifest whatever we choose to manifest.
Yes.
We can create whatever we believe we want to create, right? You know, I mean, I think we can think it. We set the intention and we're powerful spiritual beings, I believe, and we can manifest whatever we would like. And so to speak to what you were saying, you know, individually I have an individual consciousness, but together we have a human consciousness. And, you know, you could even relate it to the power of prayer. Well, why does the power of prayer work? Well, it works because there's a people as a group consciousness are putting their intention, you know, on a specific idea, a specific thought, so they can create that. They can, so we can create as an individual or as a larger group consciousness, whatever we put our thoughts and our intentions to. And sometimes, you know, they're not good thoughts or good intentions, and subsequent things happen. And then other times they're very good thoughts and very good, you know, good intentions, and then we create, you know, some things that are wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, as I say, to me, that brings on the wow factor, you know,
right.
You know, a little different than the bliss,
right.
A little different than the bliss, but the wow, I mean, it's like awesome. It really
right.
is. And to be open to and to observe that, I mean, I've even watched, my wife will make me aware of these little quails and the mama or papa quail going across the roadway in front of our cottage, you know, and the little ones are following right behind in a straight line. It's just amazing, you know, and of course they're doing it more out of self-preservation, I'm sure, but nonetheless, it's still there. So it is quite remarkable. And again, if we open ourselves up to those kinds of things, I think that, man, our civilization would be so much further along. And maybe it's my frustrations with my observations that makes me ask that question. Why? What on earth is compelling you people to continue to propagate? I have a grand niece. Okay. I'm a great uncle. And my sister's daughter had this baby and I haven't seen it physically face to face yet. They moved out to Iowa, so it makes it a little more difficult, but nonetheless, one of my first thoughts was my parents. My father was, you know, he's in his 80s. He grew up as a child through the Great Depression. My mother, I think, was in the middle of it. And then, of course, World War II. And then they had us in the late 50s, 60s, and so forth. And I know that I'm sure that my dad struggled through those times. And we, my brother and sisters, have done our share of struggling. And I'm sure that my niece has done the same. I'm aware of issues that you know she's had to deal with and so forth. And I'm thinking, does this little infant Is this little infant going to suffer the same fate as the last three generations? That doesn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying?
Well, but I think that you have a judgment on the experience.
Maybe that may be the case. Yes.
And I think that that's another thing that I'm trying to be mindful of, is to lose the judgment, you know, because if we believe that we're here to have experiences, to feel certain emotions, and, you know, to obviously learn, even though, you know, lesson I think is a punitive word, but we're here to learn and we're here to have experiences,
yeah.
I think it's very important that there's no judgment attached to the experiences. Because I believe that we choose our experiences. I believe we choose, you know, who we come here to be,
mm-hmm.
And then throw in free will. But I believe that we choose our experiences. So if we can remove the judgment from the experience, your grandniece will, or great-niece will, have the experiences that she is choosing and that she probably needs, you know, to
mm-hmm.
learn. So I think that's important. I think that if without the judgment, then it just becomes
just an experience. Yeah.
Right.
Good point. And well taken too. You know, the whole process of, and getting back to, of course, the reason why we're even here, bringing you new paradigms for a new world and giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. God is in the little things, messages from the animals. Your book, your personal journey, I think that some may pick up the book and realize, my goodness, she really condensed down her journey into this small little book here. You know, why isn't it a bigger volume? Well, you know, I have a feeling that you don't really have to say an awful lot, because we all have our stories. I was talking about this the other day with someone. You know, it doesn't really make any difference what the stories are. It's what have you learned? And again, not back to what lessons have you learned, the punitive aspect of it, but really, where are we now since we started sort of moving away from those stories? You know what I mean?
Right. No, my book is definitely a quick read. It's I think about 120 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was very conscious when I was writing the book that I didn't want to try to preach or teach to anyone. I simply did want to just tell my story. Actually, to be quite honest, my story is divinely written. I wrote most of it in 4 days. I had two very direct communications, I believe, from God that told me not only chapter by chapter what to write, but the title of the book. It all came about this past February. The name of your show is Tell Me Your Story, and my story before February was I was a computer science high school teacher. I mean, obviously on my spiritual path, but no aspirations to be a writer. And I basically, I call it kind of a download, had a download one evening and sat in bed for 4 straight days, just flowing out of me. I couldn't stop typing. And so my book is a quick read, but because I'm only trying to convey the story that I received, that I was telling me that I'm supposed to write this book. So I don't fill it with a lot of extra side stories. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, you kind of hit the ground running and take the journey with me.
Yeah. Well, and I encourage people to pick up a copy. You can also go to her website, which is God is in the Little Things. I have to say that when I first read the title, I'm going, well, she could have shortened that up just a little by just using the word details. But
that's not what was told to me.
Well, not only that, but it doesn't apply when you then go on to say messages from the animals. It doesn't quite fit. So it was like I read the subtitle and went, oh, I got it now.
Right. And you know what? And I didn't question. My second communication said very specifically, seek and you shall find, for God is in the little things. And
yeah.
I realized, wow, that's my title. You know, I was just given my title. And, you know, I did shorten it a little bit, but I do put the full phrase in the book.
Exactly.
So I do honor that.
Very appropriate, I think. I think so. Let me ask you, who is Patricia Brooks?
Patricia Brooks is your a very, very grateful, lucky woman who is able to live my purpose now, to understand and to live my purpose.
And what is it? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and my purpose came about once I received these, once these experiences with the animals started happening to me. You know, it's interesting because we talked about experiences before, and my book starts out, and I'm a very kind of discontent, sad woman who becomes, you know, emotionally distraught with the breakdown of my marriage and the subsequent aftermath of that. And so the judgment on that experience could be, oh, my God. And it was for a very long time, poor me, poor me, poor me. And, you know, not even realizing for a while that I had really started down my spiritual path and my spiritual understanding. And what an incredible gift, you know, just blessing after blessing. And so my life purpose is to share the messages that are in my book. Share the message of connection, share the message of oneness, share the message of the magnificent beings that we really are, so that other people, you know, can feel that joy and to feel that love for themselves and others. So who is Patricia Brooks? I'm an incredibly lucky woman who has found and is living her life purpose.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want people to feel better. You know, I received a text from my cousin, a male cousin, when I was pretty much at my lowest, and he said, and in his text, which was very interesting because he's very masculine male, he said, "May peace find you and wrap you like a warm blanket." And I was like, oh my gosh, like he understands. Like I finally realized that somebody understood how what I was feeling and how much pain I actually was in. And then I thought, oh my God, if he understands, then other people must feel this way. Other people feel, you know, feel sadness or, you know, dislocation from spirit or anger or all these, you know, traumas for so many different reasons. And that just struck me. I never really looked at people as being wounded before. I never really looked and thought that people maybe were feeling bad, you know, or carrying things and just getting through life. And that made me want to help. And I think that's another reason that God, you know, gave me the communications that he gave me, that directed me really to tell my story, because I want to help. I want people to feel better. I want them to know their spiritual self. And in knowing their spiritual self, you know, I believe there's tremendous joy.
Well, kudos to your cousin. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Life-changing.
Absolutely. How powerful are we as human beings?
Oh, I think we're unlimited. I think we have unlimited power. You know, that goes back to what we said before as far as, you know, being able to manifest whatever we put our intention to. You know, we are spiritual beings. Imagine that. You know, I think that we limit ourselves with our human shell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the human form has tremendous value and purpose. But, in inside of that is a very powerful spiritual being. And I think that we don't, you know, we don't realize, you know, that enough.
Mm. Patricia Brooks, I want to thank you so much for sharing your book, God is in the Little Things, Messages from the Animals, and it's your personal journey. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us as much time as you have.
Thank you, Richard. I really enjoyed it.
I'm Richard Dugan, and we've been talking with Patricia Brooks, talking about her personal journey, God is in the Little Things, Messages from the Animals, here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at this time, love to Lal.